Hello and welcome to the Declarations of Word podcast, episode 77. Your host for this evening are myself, Alexev Card, the one and only Ninja Turtle.
Hello.
CSM Representative Ali Aras.
Hey, folks.
And our special guest for this evening is Adriel Malachi from Break-A-Wish Foundation.
Hello.
Do hope I pronounced your name right.
Good enough.
All right, so we're just going to give out some shout-outs. I want to thank Triumvirate for being excellent and extremely patient scrim partners. We've been practicing them with Her Alliance Tournament 12. They've been extremely helpful and extremely awesome. So thank you, guys, and look forward to future fights with you. Hopefully every week, fingers crossed.
I want to give a shout-out to LockFox and Fuzzy Steve, as well as everyone else who's working on the Kreas industry changes, putting in a lot of time to understand stuff, get on Sissy, submit bugs, all that business. So that when this comes out, it's awesome.
I want to give a shout out to Team USA for beating Ghana.
USA!
Awesome.
USA!
Yeah.
USA!
It's a good time.
Number great one gold game. Medal. Best country ever.
Yep, basically.
And I'd like to give a shout out to all the folks in Break-A-Wish Foundation for being great guys and using all your Neutralogy to piss off all the random people in HiSec. And I'd also like to give a big shout-out to SnakeFast and Jake Patton from eve-tools.com. They make a bunch of really great tools for helping out with war decks and all kinds of industry crap and stuff like that. And it's very useful and very helpful, and I recommend everybody go check it out when you get a chance.
Yeah, I wanted to get Jake on with you. He's on part of Pursuit of Happiness, recommended to me by Zeus as like the guy to talk to in that alliance. But unfortunately, we couldn't work out the times. But hopefully, you know, maybe we'll have him on in a future show if we can get him scheduled. He's a really cool dude from out of here. All right, Turtle, do you want to plug these meetups? What's going on?
So last weekend in August, there is a Midwest meetup in the U.S., Des Moines, Iowa, to be specific. It's being held by a bunch of guys that showed up to the Milwaukee meet. They made the trip up to Milwaukee and from Minnesota, from Iowa. And so they're setting up another one. It's going to be down in Des Moines. There's a thread on the forums, obviously. We'll have a link to. It's going to be kind of like a weekend thing, so maybe expect like a little bit of a hotel stay, but they're trying to make it as cheap as possible for everybody. So I don't know if I'm going to that, but we are sponsoring it as a podcast, which I was delighted to sponsor it once I found out that you don't actually have to like give any money or anything to be a sponsor. You just got to talk about it.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah, I know. It's great. So I might just like send them a couple shirts or something. Just
I'm sponsoring you so hard right now.
I know. You guys just like, and I tweeted about it once, and so it was like, boom. It's like Nike up in here.
If anything, they should be paying us.
Basically. So, yeah. Check the forums for that if you guys are interested. It should be a good time. Those guys are pretty fun.
Since we're plugging meetups, there's a Boston meetup this Saturday, June 21st at 2 p.m. It's a recurring thing, so you can see them coming around on the forums. Probably the next one will be in like August or so, following the pattern from last year. But Mead Hall in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'll be there. It's always a great time. It's always hilarious. Ton of fun.
Yeah, if we're lucky, I might get someone that used to play Eve that's living in the Connecticut area. I'm not sure what part of Connecticut she's in, but if it's the close to Boston part, maybe she'll come up.
Yeah.
Trying to, like, work her to come back. All right, so we had a poll up. Will you miss Jester's Trek? Jester's Trek is Rip Ortega's blog, the former CSM duder, former tinfoiler, I suppose current tinfoiler, but now tinfoiler without a microphone, as he announced his retirement presumably as a blogger in general, certainly on this particular site. So we put it to the audience. It's a very controversial blog. Will you miss it? And the majority will. 56% will miss Jester's Trek. 44% say good riddance, not even going to notice, don't even care. Allie, I'm going to assume you were in the we'll miss it category.
Yeah, I'll miss it.
And Turtle, I'm going to guess. Actually, no, I would say will not, but I don't know. Turtle might have enjoyed the antagonism.
No, I voted yes. I will definitely miss Jester's track. I'll miss him as a personality and even general. I don't think it's any benefit to the community to not have him blogging anymore.
Yeah, I disagree. I don't think he was a positive voice for the community. And as we're free to have a very vibrant and diverse blogging community and podcasting community for that matter. But I think lines were crossed with Ripart, and I think he became a much more negative force than any positive effect he was having. So I have no influence on his decisions one way or the other, but I think it'll be a good, a net positive for us as a community.
I mean, you can always just not go to the blog, is basically how I've seen it, so.
Well, and I frequently didn't, but many other people did, and he developed quite a cult following of people that really fervently believe whatever he would put to paper. And I don't think he used his microphone very constructively lately, say within the past 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, but that also, like, ignores, like, 4 to 5 years before it.
Those are 4 to 5 years. I wasn't really reading anything he wrote, though, unless it was directly involving us. So, you know, I was never a huge reader in the first place. I really only became aware of it when we had our little spats on the show. But then he came on the show, and I feel like we reached a good place with Ripart. And then a couple months back, he just went in a direction that I really had some strong feelings against. And, yeah. That's, he didn't seem at all apologetic for that. So, you know, in my head, I'm, like, assuming that if he kept on with the blog, he would probably keep going in that direction. And in that case, no, I wouldn't miss it. But I recognize that I'm in the minority because I, A, was not a regular reader, and B, most people don't have strong feelings about it. Which is fine. I have a feeling he will blog again, though, at some point. Ripart is too prolific to just put the pen down completely. Moving on to some Eve news. The big headline, in my view, even though it has nothing to do with 00 or anything like that, Shadow Cartel, one of the largest, most powerful, certainly one of the most feared low-sec alliances in recent memory, has had a bit of a schism. They had a split in two with a new group forming, a new alliance forming out of some of their corps called Overheat Everything. And it appears that the main division was around a little bit of time zone, a little bit of a feeling that Shadow Cartel had become too big with too many assets to defend and wasn't able to be agile enough to get the fights that it used to. So their U.S. time zone broke off under a new name, less responsibilities. As far as we know, still friendly with one another. What do you think this is going to do to the face of LoSec? Because Shadow Cartel is fairly feared in that they're almost like the Pandemic Legion of LoSec. Not to mince any words.
Which is kind of funny, because Pandemic Legion is ostensibly headquartered in Amake, which is LoSec. But yeah, I mean, I guess the real question is, will they still drop together?
Well, that's it. It's like you call them the Pandemic Legion of LoSec. It's like their ability to coordinate capital drops in LoSec is why they're feared. Like, and are they going to be able to do that as perfectly with two groups as one? No. Like, are they even going to work remotely as close together? So, like, this could be a pretty big hit to their ability to actually drop on targets. Like, watch out for bait now, you know?
Adriel, I've seen you guys in LoSec recently. What's your view on this?
Yeah, we've been getting more and more heavily involved in LoSec, but most of what we do is up near Black Rise, so we don't tend to see too much of Shadow Cartel up in that area that often. It's mostly Snuffbox is kind of the big dog in that area. We used to live out in Galente space and saw Shadow Cartel an awful lot, and out there they're definitely much bigger players. So I think probably in that area it'll it has the potential to make a big difference. I think as Turtle pointed out, it really kind of all boils down to how well they really stay coordinated and working with the rest of the Shadow Cartel body. But I'm honestly not that aware of how big they are in the U.S. time zone relative to their strength in other time zones. So at least in
definitely
my
their hugest fleets were EU, but I'm pretty sure they had a sizable cap force in the U.S. time zone, certainly probably a dozen, I would say.
I think it probably will end up having some kind of effect, obviously, but as far as their projection up towards the areas that I'm typically in, I doubt that this will make any difference whatsoever.
I think it'll be interesting to see whether or not more fights result from both groups. It'll depend, like Turtle mentioned, how much they coordinate with one another, but Shadow Cartel not being as monolithic as it used to be might increase the fightiness of Losec, because, I mean, along with Pandemic Legion and groups like that and Snuffbox, those are the type of groups that sort of put a bit of an ice pack on other groups fighting, because you're always worried about getting dropped by guys like that. So
yeah, there's a huge aspect of name recognition to it decision to undock.
Yeah, and I imagine that the guys in Overlord Everything, or I think that's their name, they'll probably get quite a number of fights, at least for the first few months, until people start recognizing the ticker.
Yeah, because you know there's going to be people that aren't reading the news. I'm like, oh, never heard of these guys.
Yeah, never reading the news, don't check kill boards. So that, I guess both them and Shadow Cartel, assuming that they paid for Shadow Cartel, will get tons of kills, but eventually that'll all dry up as they get overfished.
Yeah, but at that point, they will have had the enjoyment.
Sure.
So it looks like Losec in general is more exciting. I'm getting even more jealous that my alliance doesn't live there. Sad face. In 00 news, we've got three major flashpoints happening right now. In Geminate, we've got elements of the CFC, or really just one, AFCON, is fighting Legion of XX Death XXX. It doesn't appear to be a serious territory conquest. It appears to be just a campaign to keep them sharp. There seems to be no real animosity between the two groups. They're just fighting for the sake of fighting. X-Death has been sort of a neutral entity, having a bit of protected status, I guess, in that the leaders of the Alliance are friendly with both the CFC, Pandemic Legion, and NCDOT, so it's just kind of there in a region that no one else really wants. They're not bringing the whole CFC with them, so it's not like a big soft grind. There are fights occurring. And there is some SAV offensives going on, but it's not like a huge super blob or anything like that. The other hotspot is Providence. Providence is long occupied that in a region no one wants, so it's fine space. But now apparently some people want it, or at least want the fights that are generated from it. You're seeing activity from NCDOT, you're seeing activity from the Unthinkables, you're seeing some limited activity from Nully and Brave. And CVA is putting up a valiant defense. So far they've lost a handful of systems, nothing critical, although D-G was a pretty big loss for them, and they've since given up retaking it, at least in the short term, thanks to a diplomatic agreement. Providence, as most listeners will know, is an area that Noir watches quite closely, and I can't say that I'm not enjoying the show. It looks like the fights are awesome. And it's good to see CVA getting taken down a peg.
On the sort of flip side to that, though, CVA gets taken down a peg basically like clockwork. There's the sort of grand old tradition of the Providence Morale Tour, in which an alliance who can't get a fight, either who can't win a serious fight or can't take a serious fight for diplomatic reasons, opts instead to go beat up on Providence, chest beat on Kukutsman, and generally just make a giant nuisance of themselves until they remember that sov grinding is hard, the region has a lot of stations, and really, it's better if we could all come back and do this again in 3 months. So different entities have been dealing with this particular fight in Providence differently. There's been everything from what, by all accounts, seems like good, good fights with fairly even contests, CVA fleets pitched against another fleet, versus, in particular, Pandemic Legion coming down with just a whole bunch of supers whenever they end up at risk of losing a conflict.
The PL isn't really flipping systems, at least so far.
Sure. I mean, I'm just saying, even though there's a couple systems flip, which I haven't seen in my time playing Eve, it's the general sort of theme of let's all deploy down to Providence is a thing that comes and goes like the weather.
Yeah, very true. The same thing sort of happens in our other Flashpoint, Delve, which is pretty much the same old story. You got alliances coming down there looking for fights and not much else. In particular, Black Legion, NCDOT a little bit, Nully a little bit, but not really, and mostly Pasta, which is the Confederation of Pizza, if you're familiar with those guys. And they're like attending groups. And they're staging in Delve, and they're hitting pretty much the groups that live down there. They're considered CFC, but it's the southern half of CFC, so not Goon Swarm proper. You're talking more Initiative, you're talking some Renners. And that's where we're at right now. We went with Black Legion, and the fights have been pretty good. I've missed out on a lot of the big ones because they've been happening earlier than, or much later than I'm able to log on. But we've had some Noir guys in the fights, and they seem to be going pretty well. Nothing, like, huge or noteworthy, but that the fighting is going on is somewhat significant. It represents a major shift for Black Legion, because they were previously focusing on Pureblind, Declan, those areas, and now have distinctly relocated about 4 Sinos south. And so far, the Goonswarm has not followed them. So they're sort of leaving the southern half of the CFC to stand alone at the moment. Even though that there's no serious threat or reason for them to reposition, it's still interesting to see how they manage their coalition and manage defending. And that's pretty much it for the Nullsec stuff. Not a lot going on for the past 2 weeks, unfortunately. So we move on to This Week in Mercs, of which there was also not tons going on, but we have Adro Malachi here. And he is the leader of one of the 2 seriously respected high-sec merc groups. Like, I do Pursuit of Happiness, and I do you guys, Break-A-Wish Foundation. You're both pretty fantastic.
Thanks.
So, Adriel, let's talk about you as a player. How'd you get started in EVE?
Well, I've actually been playing since 2006. Adriel's actually my second character. My first character started off in Goonswarm. I played with them back when they were still in Syndicate many years ago, and through the whole Bob crisis and all that good stuff, and quit for a couple years during college, and then got back into the game in 2010 and ended up making Adriel, and started off a PvP group for high sec and low sec shenanigans called Should Check Local with some buddies of mine who were in the corp that I was in at the time. And since then, we've pretty much just been griefing the living crap out of people for 4 years now. Back in, I guess, 2011 it was, we ended up creating the Alliance because mostly because back then, during all the war mechanics, as a corp, you could only deck 3 people. Or 3 groups at a time, and it took 48 hours instead of 24. This is
then you had to do the corporate vote.
Yeah, the whole corporate
vote. Oh, that was fun.
Oh, that was miserable. So, you know, it was one of those things where we ended up spending the billionist to make the Alliance, and then a hell of a lot more money for all the decks just so that we could insta-deck people. And kept on griefing for a while until we got tired of paying all the bills, and then went into being mercs in June of 2012. And haven't looked back, and kind of since then we've, at least I'd like to think we've kind of built up a reputation of being people who primarily go after the guys that nobody else will go after or can go after, and a lot of our work is actually taking down other merc groups. And I think we do a pretty good job of it and have a pretty good time. And I guess the only other big news for us is in March of this year, we finally merged with Pendulum of Doom, the guys from Filthy Fuse, the corp led by Euler. And we've been really good friends with them for years and years, and finally just got to the point where it made more sense to be in one group. And I guess that's kind of the big overview for that.
Yeah, Euler's a cool dude.
He is. He's an interesting man.
Yeah. So let's talk about your merc business. Are you primarily focused on high sec? You also mentioned that you do some stuff in low sec as well. Is that contract stuff, or you just go in there for the fights?
So the vast majority of our contract work is high sec. We do a little bit of low sec, but the reality is that we can't field enough capitals to be that competitive with a lot of the groups that are in low sec, kind of as a general rule. So most of our stuff that is actually contract based is high sec, just because that's where we can actually really guarantee our work. So a lot of the stuff that we do in wormhole space and primarily NPC null and low sec tends to be just for giggles when there's not much going on in our high sec stuff.
And how many contracts do you guys take a week? Give or take.
Lots. So how many we have going at any time kind of depends. We generally strive for at least 1,500 targets to shoot at a time.
That's not all contract, though.
No. So we take as many contracts as we can up till that amount, generally. And then on top of that, we'll do fun decks. Some weeks we'll have one contract, maybe two contracts. Other weeks we'll have six or seven. And it really depends on how busy the week is. And for high sec, that can sound like a lot, but it's really not. Because a lot of the high sec merc work, the way it actually works is you just add everybody to your watch list, which, as I mentioned before, Eve Tools is how we do that. It's a great site for that. It pulls from Eve Who, and really good interface for doing that. And so you can have a whole ton of contracts that you can effectively enforce just by keeping track of when people actually log in and then go and run after them. So.
And how big are you guys? Like, what's your total amount? What's your, say, your biggest fleet or your best fleet?
Our total member count is roughly 50 people. It's a little smaller than that now. And our general fleets on kind of like your average weeknight tends to be about 15 to 20. On big weekends or major ops, we can get up to 30 or 40 people.
That's a really good participation for such a small corp or alliance, excuse me.
Yeah, we're all pretty good friends. You know, we all play other games and we all are quite active. We know everybody's got real jobs, real lives in school and stuff, but pretty much everybody, when they have time, when they get off of work, they tend to go on. I mean, we start off real small, and we've kind of tried to stay small and tighten it. And so everybody who's in the alliance is actually interested in playing. So
that's excellent.
You mentioned taking contracts against other merc groups. How is that different from work against, I don't know, civilian people, so to say?
So the biggest difference is that, like most of the other, at least remotely decent high sec mercs, everybody's got lists of everybody else's alts. And so the biggest difference with going against other mercs is that we tend to know a lot of the tricks that everybody uses. So especially these days, most people tend to have neutral logi, most people tend to have boosters and neutral scouts, so like buzzards and stuff scouting for everybody. And so going against them, you tend to have to use a lot more tricks. So things like scanning down wormholes and jumping through them onto fleets. You have to do log off traps and all kinds of fun stuff like that. Whereas going up against, you know, your random group of people, even if they are PvPers, or especially like industrial groups or people like that who have no idea what they're doing, you can be really brazen and really not even have to scout except for just trying to find rattlesnakes or whatever. But going up against other mercs, people tend to be more prepared. And so it's really a question of how well can you pull off your traps and get them to actually engage you, and when they engage you, then it's a question of how well coordinated are your reps and, you know, how well people actually can follow primaries and things like that.
So for your work, what kind of fleets do you favor? Are you guys more shield to cover a lot of ground chasing after these targets, or do you prefer the kind of heavy armor battleships and Tech 3 fleets we see in high sec?
We primarily use armor T3s and hacks. A lot of that, well, and actually recently we've started using Stratioses a lot. The biggest reason for that over shield is that in high sec, you have a very large problem of, especially with, you know, contracts against, you know, non-PvP groups that don't want to fight, but because you're being paid to kill them, you have to kill them anyways. The biggest problem is that people try to run. And so they'll have a bunch of stabs, or they'll try to burn back the gate or whatever. And the reality is that a lot of shield ships just don't have enough hard tackle to make sure people don't get away. So because of that, we tend to try to use a lot of the lighter, I suppose, smaller armor craft. Before, I'd say probably before the warp changes, we tended to use armored battleships more. But now they're just so slow that there's no point in ever using them unless somebody comes to our headquarters in Norv, and that just doesn't happen anymore. We don't get fights that much in high sec unless we trick people, so which is why we do so much stuff elsewhere. But
yeah, and do you guys take post jobs as well, or do you do structure fights, or is it strictly war decks for killing members?
We will do posses, pocos, whatever, AWOXs, ganks. We'll do pretty much anything for money.
All right, what's the best way for our audience to contact you if they need some high sec work?
The best way is to send me an email or Euler an email. So that's Adriel Malachi or Euler.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Stick with us. You've got a little bit more to talk about. We're going to move into the CSM corner. Allie is going to give us her first impressions of the new expansion. I mean, the new expansion as we move into this, like, get a new one every 3 months cycle, which is kind of cool.
Every 6 weeks. It's even faster than that. So I believe I talked about this on the last cast. Kreas, which is the next release coming July 22nd, is now available on Singularity, has been for a little bit. So this is the expansion that all the industry updates got pushed back to. And the reason why they got pushed back is partly for this reason. CCP wanted to get them out on Kreas and get them out early so we could have a chance to go through them, see what broke, etc. It's especially important for industry, where you've got a lot of people who have weirdly specialized workflows that they've developed over the past 4 or 8 years. So I went in and took a look at it, mostly in my role as the newbie CSM member. I've done a lot of things in EVE. Most of the things that I've done have involved shooting guns on a spaceship. I did some moon mining and reacting for a little bit, but industry, in terms of actually, you know, taking goods and producing things, is something that I'd mostly left to other people. So I got on Singularity to try to see, basically, can I learn how to do industry in Kreas as someone who knows how to play EVE, which is a good leg up, but has no idea what to do with the industry thing. And my verdict is, it's all right. It's definitely a step up from where we are right now. The interface is a lot more clean. I had a good idea of, like, oh, I have blueprints. I can look at these and start to see how many minerals I'm going to use, stuff like that. The parts that were missing is there wasn't a lot of visibility into what was affecting things like my build costs. It'll take me so many minerals to build this Imachus, but no way to tell whether that's a lot of minerals, a little minerals, whether I should put the blueprint into research or put a little bit of time into material and time efficiency skills. Overall, industry has been given this sort of workover intended to make it more dynamic. The cost of things in systems, the cost of building in systems shifts around. For a smaller or more mobile industrialist, you can get a big profit advantage by basically following where the building is good, which is very great, but some of the stuff that I need to learn to really appreciate that depth wasn't very easy to find in the interface and in the UI. So that would be my biggest disappointment with what's coming out.
I had remarked a couple times, we were talking about this before, about the lack of a cost calculator in terms of like factoring in what goes into it, how much you should charge for it when it pops out, whether it's worth building, like a what should I build kind of thing. When you were going through that from like the newbie's perspective, did you find that that was something that you were wanting, or was it not really a factor for you?
I wanted it to be a part of the interface that exists. So one of the things that got updated was the refining UI, and it's got the great property of I can right-click on an object, reprocess it, and I'll see how much money I would have gotten for the raw object and how much money I could get for the reprocessed object. So it's a great way to see, check in the interface, if I reprocess this, do I make more money than I would if I just sell this to a buy? You know, using the estimated price formula, which is sometimes accurate, but it's close enough. It's a decent estimate.
It's an idea, at least.
Yeah. That works really, really well on the reprocessing interface, and it doesn't happen on the building interface. And the lack of that and the lack of an easy way for me to say, well, I'm building this in Amar, but what if I took it over to Sobiseki and I built it there? Just pulling two system names completely out of my hat. I don't have the ability to, you know, kind of think about, well, what if I move my blueprint around? What if I research my blueprint a little bit more? One of the big things that I wanted to be able to see in the interface and I couldn't was, where is most of my cost on this build coming from? Is it coming from the materials? Is it coming from the workers and the workers and the facility costs, the blueprint, you know? How much profit am I making? I think there's a lot more information that could be revealed in tooltips or context things. Just a little bit more stuff there would do a lot to make it, as you say, to do the kind of cost calculator thing without literally popping up a spreadsheet at you. Because right. At the end of the day, building a spreadsheet is absolutely going to be necessary to be a serious industrialist. And I think that's fine. You have to do a lot of math. Spreadsheets are great at that. But I shouldn't have to build a spreadsheet in order to try out industry. And I feel like that goal hasn't quite been met yet.
So where is CCP sitting on this? Obviously, this is going to be the first of the expansions on this this rolling six-week schedule. Do you think they're adapting very well to the new development cycle? Do you think they're going to get the appropriate feedback and make changes in time for the release?
Yeah, I think more or less. It's interesting because it's, you know, we just had the Kronos release, which was the actual first 6-week release, even though both Kronos and Krios are they're fat releases. The one after Krios will be smaller. Just because they have all the stuff that was originally going to be a whole summer expansion stuffed into them. I think CCP is doing okay. It's a little bit weird as a CSM because, I mean, you are on the CSM. You know, in the weeks leading up to an expansion, if you have things that you want to talk to CCP about, it becomes awful hard to get a hold of them. Unless that's feedback on what's going out at the right time.
And usually only if they come to you for it.
Yeah. Everyone's got their head down, they're working on it, and all that. And so I had sort of adapted to the two release cycle, which was you know, everyone gets their head down for a month, and then expansion drops. There's about a week or two of just bug fixing, and then, you know, suddenly the forums light up with, hey, we're thinking about ring mining in destroyers. What do you think? And you get these great kind of far future speculative discussions that can be a lot of fun and contain some serious features that are seriously coming out. And you get that kind of high level design overview that's really valuable as a CSM. You know, so it's kind of weird. We just had Kronos drop, and some of the teams are in that phase where they're like, oh, we're working on design for the next thing that we're doing, and yada, yada, yada. But some of the teams still have their heads down. And that's a little, you know, new. I think I'll be able to say when the summit comes around, after I've had the summer summit experience, exactly how this development thing is working out, how it feels. We'll have had a little bit more time with it. CCP will have had a little bit more time with it. And in particular, the summit is kind of the concentrated development experience. And getting to see how that works will be exciting. The one thing I can say, just sort of going back to the first impressions thing, one of the things that I was really worried about was the worker teams and how those were going to be presented in the interface, how those were going to be bid on, if they were going to be a royal pain in the neck to figure out. And they were surprisingly easy to use. Picking one out was fine. The filtering was fine. Bidding on one was fine. The UI was a little bit confusing, but I was able to figure it out with a couple of hours of experimentation, which is, you know, more than I can say for some other UIs. Once I figured it out, it made sense. So, big kudos to CCP on that one.
All right, moving on. We've got the masterclass. We're going to do a masterclass on the importance of communication in small gang warfare. Now, obviously, this is a huge topic. We're not going to be able to cover it in probably all the depth that it deserves. But I did want to cover a couple interesting examples of it. And two examples of what happens when things go wrong, and a great example of when things go right. So, a couple weeks back, we had a war. It was HiSec. I believe this was RVV. Wasn't. Sorry to whoever it was against. Sovereign Apocalypse had a Hugin, and we were in a Kitey fleet. There's no reason his Hugin should have been less than 35 kilometers from any target whatsoever. We're running away from a large fleet. Our fleet jumps through the gate. FC calls in a line point. The fleet aligns. He thinks everything is fine. The fleet's pulled way off the gate, so he thinks. Like you said, everybody's long-range fit. No one should be in any danger for what's jumping in. Initial tackle starts to jump in. Oh, all of a sudden, Cyber calls out, oh, they got me, guys. I'm tackled. Everybody's like, oh, well, what? What? Why? How? Turns out that the align point from where he spawned on the gate dragged him past the gate so that when the enemy fleet jumped in, he was about 5 kilometers off the gate.
Really?
Yep. So in this case, really important, he should have told the FC, this is going to bring me, you know, into a danger spot on the gate. I know we're running away from this fleet here. You know, maybe I need to do something different. He can either burn to a different direction that'll give him a healthier align and then align with the rest of the fleet. He could just warp off if he has to, and then he could always come back later, especially in high sec or low sec where you don't have to worry about bubbles. It's definitely a good move. As it was, he died. And it was a very expensive loss because he had 2 faction webs. So it was like a 500 mil loss or so for no purpose whatsoever. No kills were gotten. There was no fun to be had. It was just him being a derp. Speaking of being a derp, a pilot called Dead Knight did something so bad that I threw him out on the spot. Now, considering Sovereign did not get kicked out, you know, that's saying something. But this was like 2 or 3 days after. Same war. We're in a Ishtar fleet, shield Ishtars at range. We're coming in at 100 on this red versus blue fleet that's attacking a Poco. The plan is we'll warp in at range, drop our drones, and kite back. As their tacklers come in, we'll pop them, and then we'll start taking pot shots at the enemy logistics ships, especially their Tech 1 logistics cruisers, which have much weaker tanks. Now, our fleet is not very large, but I feel like we're safe enough that if we go in at range, we can get some kills, and if we don't, we'll at worst have to leave a flight of drones behind. Not a big deal. Drones don't really go on the kill board, so it's cool. Fleet goes to a ping, so we get the proper angle, and we warp in. We land at 100, start firing. Dead Knight was not with us at our ping spot. He was at the fuck knows celestial in the system. And instead of warping to 100 on the enemy fleet, he warped in at 0 to the Poco they were shooting. Dead Knight was immediately killed. I warped our fleet off. There was not much we could kill to even come close to getting that efficiency back. Like I said, our Ishtars would have been under no threat whatsoever if they had simply followed orders. But not only did Dead Knight not follow the FC's commands, not only did he mistakenly warp on 0 on an enemy fleet, but he didn't even let the fleet know that he wasn't with them. It's really important if you're in the situation, especially a high-stress situation like that, if you become separated from the fleet, you need to let your FC know, and then it's on you to take extra care of your ship, because when you're by yourself, you're obviously much more vulnerable than with your, you know, with the security of the rest of your fleet, their damage, their tackle, their EWAR, their reps. You can't handle an enemy fleet by yourself, so don't move around like you can. Get safe. Talk to the FC. Let him know what he wants you to do. Is he going to hold the fleet there while you catch up? Is he going to warp in and then you can warp to them? Does he want you to just warp in a different range and take care of yourself? Who knows? You got to talk to him and communicate. So the FC will tell you what he wants you to do, believe me. You might get yelled at for separating yourself from the fleet, but, you know, that's just the price of it, you know? Pay attention.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's easy, especially when the root cause of what's going on is you fucked up. You were, you know, your housemate came into the room, you were too involved in your solitaire game, whatever, to keep up with the fleet and pay attention to the FC's orders. And so the root cause of you being lost and stranded with an enemy fleet and system is... you screwed up. It can be really, really, really hard to push that button, and the FC will be mad at you. But the thing to remember is, one, the FC will be more mad at you when you die, witness the whole immediately kicked out thing, and two, everyone screws up. It'll pass, and your FC will be able to maintain the fleet better. You might get out of it alive. It's very important to actually accomplish the objective that you set out to accomplish.
Now, here's some examples of things that go right. So, we're taking a fleet into Pisari. It's a small frigate fleet. I believe it's 2 interceptors, an assault frigate, and I want to say a stealth bomber, perhaps 2 stealth bombers. I think we just had the one. We found a rupture. He's in space, chilling. I was like, oh, one rupture? I think we can handle that. I was in a Sentinel at the time. So we go in, start the tackling. Oh, we get him. He's very feisty, and despite being hit with a tracking disruptor, he's still kicking out some good damage, and we have to juggle, you know, who's got point on this dude. Then he brings in a friend, another rupture. Problems. We have nowhere near the amount of crowd control for 2 ruptures at the same time. So, we're talking. All of a sudden, one of our bomber pilot yells out, he's like, oh, I'm tackled him down. And he dropped like a sack. This was Pain Phoenix. Pain Phoenix lost the bomber to two ruptures. Again, no point to doing that. This is a stealth bomber. His engagement range is about 45 to 50 kilometers. Rupture's engagement range is about 15 to 25. Probably closer to around 25, but not much further than that at all. One of them was tracking disrupted. They were all pointed. There's no reason he should have been anywhere close to them, but he was. Then he didn't tell anybody, and he died. Well, he said, okay, asshole. Thanks for, like, this should have been an engagement where we killed at least one of them or warped off with no losses. Now we lost you. So we're going to get another ship and we're going to do this right. I think I yelled at him for about 5 minutes. We find the dude sitting in a safe spot. We go in again. Same fleet. This time, everybody is on the communication train. We're calling points. We're calling electronic warfare. We're calling damage. We're calling range. We're watching each other's backs. Like, this rupture's trying to close range with one of the bombers. And we're like, okay, bomber, just warp off. You can come back on Alec at like 20. That'll put you at a good range from this other rupture that we're working on. So this happens. It takes about 10, 15 minutes, but eventually we kill both of the ruptures clean. No losses. That is the difference between having communication in your fleet and not having communication in your fleet. We took the same exact fleet against the same two ruptures, same two pilots. First one, we got nothing and lost the bomber because guy wasn't paying attention and we weren't communicating properly. Second time, everybody was paying attention to what their ranges were. Everybody was communicating. We killed them both without losing a single thing. There's really nothing to communication but getting out there and doing it. And you're going to feel it every time you screw up because there wasn't enough communication. If you take that to heart, there's no reason you can't improve it to be like very top-notch. It's a skill that everyone can learn. Doesn't require a training queue, you know? And I would say that more than any skill you can train in the game, being able to communicate either as an FC to your fleet or as a fleet to your FC, or if you're in a really small group just directly between each other, it's probably the single greatest factor to contribute to winning or losing fights in tough situations. All right. And before we close out, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor, EveBet. Eve-Bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real-life sports with ISK, including the World Cup. I know a few NAR guys who are betting on it right now, including one dude that won and one dude that got cleaned out, apparently. They've handled well over $50 trillion in bets since opening, so they're a service you can trust. You're going to be able to bet on the Alliance tournament when it comes up. They've also got blackjack, slot machines. All their odds are industry standard, and they're always adding new stuff you can bet on every week. So go check it out, eve-bet.com. That is it for episode 77. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment, or put in a donation. Grab yourself some sweet Declarations of War merch at welovefine.com/eve by clicking on our store link. And reach Noir via our public channel, Cafe Noir Dot, and apply to join us or Noir Academy on the forums at noirmerch.com. We are recruiting especially for corps. If you're out there listening, good hunting, listeners.
Just like I only swear.